Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, RV, boat, motorcycle, whatever it may be, they'll do a great job at Purdy Insurance of making sure you're fully insured and do everything they can, whether it's under certain circumstances going over state lines or bundles, saving you money. Customer service means everything to them. At Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Phillies go for it tonight against the Diamondbacks at home with Nola on the mound. After winning the critical fifth game in Arizona and the Eagles. You know, it's funny, Matt, like those sweet green uniforms, right? I mean, those are nice.
Kelly greens, I loved it.
You know what's interesting? Like somebody said to me, he says, yeah, it's kind of like when you were a kid. I said, yeah, except the funny thing is it's kept for a bubblegum card. We only had a black and white TV, so I never really got to see how good it looked.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
I'm not kidding. We had black and white TVs. I was like, oh, that's what they look like. Okay. They're sweet. Really nice. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
A second and goal to go from the left hash one. Andrews over the football to snap it back. Jones has it. Looks to his right. Throws it to the right. Got it. Touchdown.
He's got it.
Patriots.
Bob Soci with the call. Our good friend Bob Soci, who had the Navy job, by the way, before he took the Patriots job. That's where I first got to know Bob. And the touchdown pass was to another good friend of the show, Mike Gesicki, who caught it, and the Patriots' 300th regular season win for Bill Belichick. All right, let's turn our attention now back to Penn State for a moment, bring in Jay Paterno. First of all, Jay, how have you been? It's great to have you with us.
Well, I was having a great fall until Saturday, but I mean, you know, the reality is the sun came up, so it's onward and upward.
All right, you've been in this position before, and on a day where you end up going 1-for-16 on third down, which in the end is that's the part that just crushes you offensively. You can't sustain anything. You know, what as you're standing there trying to come up with, quote, something, because you know what's happening, how difficult is that as you're trying to go through a game and say, okay, we got to find something that works to keep drives going? What's that like because you've lived it?
Well, I think everybody's focused on the 1-for-16 on the third downs, really. And the number beside that number is really the 1-of-8 on third and fourth downs and 4 or less. That's where they really didn't make any hay.
Right, and that's what I talked about. Yeah.
That's your swing. That's your swing right there because, you know, third one was 3rd and 30. I mean, God doesn't make that. But at the end of the day, those are the things. And so you're trying to, and they tried different things. I think, you know, they threw the ball out to Singleton on the 3rd and 1. It was a little behind them. They tried throwing, tried running it. So I just think that Ohio State's really good defensively. You know, I mean, some of the things Ohio State's tried to do in their short yardage, they used Devin Brown coming into that game who got hurt. There may be, you know, as you go ahead, there may be a role for a guy like Pavula to do that kind of stuff if they're still having those kind of troubles. But it's difficult. But dang, you're still in that game. And that game came out pretty much how most people thought it was going to be, come down to a mistake or a turnover. And Penn State just didn't capitalize on the turnover and made the shot.
It's difficult because, see, I'm trying to think, you know, somebody one time told me, well, he probably told me 30 times. He said something to me about, Steve, it comes down to 4 or 5 key plays every game, and it could be play 1, it could be play 78. I think you may know who with that individual backwards.
I heard that. Believe me, I heard that a few times, too.
Yeah, okay. And I felt the Ohio State games over the last few years, for the most part, have come down to a key player sequence in the first half and a key player sequence in the second half, and Ohio State, for the most part, has won those.
Yeah,
the
no
first
doubt.
Half, and the sequence was the Jacobs play,
Yep.
And then they keep the ball, get a touchdown. The other one was after the punt went off the foot of Fleming and Elsdon recovered and Penn State could not convert and then went for it on fourth down and Ohio State eventually scored. Is that too simple on my part?
No, I think that's the main thing. I think if you look at when the ball went off Fleming's foot, I'm watching the game going, okay, there's the Mark Rubin moment that we've all been waiting for. You know,
that's what I told Jack. That's what I told Jack. Exactly what I told Jack, the Mark Rubin moment.
Baby kid that didn't come to Penn State, he's at Ohio State. I'm going, oh my God, it's poetic justice. And we didn't, you know, obviously didn't get the score on it. And I think one of the things, you know, there's been a lot of people critical of the offensive court, Mike Yurcich. There's been a lot of people critical of what Al Allar played. But the reality is this. You know, you're in an offense that's a little different than what Penn State's been because you don't have that mobile quarterback. And that, the minute you don't have the mobile quarterback, that opens up all the coverage playbook to you as a coordinator on defense. So it makes it more difficult in those third downs because they can do more stuff. And Ohio State's a really, really good defensive football team.
Yes.
They tackle really, really well. I mean, they hadn't given up a pass play of 36 yards or longer than 36 yards all year. Have not given up a run of 22 yards or more than 22 yards all year. They're not great offensively, but they're going to be a handful for plays them, you know, on defense.
1995 game at Michigan State. Last play of the game, Wally gets the ball to Bobby Engram because Joe said, plain out, I want the ball in Bobby Engram's hands because he's the best player in the field. You knew going into the game Marvin Harrison was the best player in the field. In fact, when they played Georgia, he was the best player on the field. Not Jalen Carter, not Nolan Smith. It was Marvin Harrison. How difficult is it? I know he's a wide receiver, but how difficult is it all day long to deal with a guy like that who is the best player in the field?
Well, what people realize is he's so big and physical, so it's tough. You mean, you know, King interfered with him on a couple of plays, and he still caught the dang ball. And, you know, you can't do much more than that. You know, you're breaking the rules to cover him. But what I think people realize is for most of that game, Penn State kept Ohio State on a long field. They kept him in check. He didn't get the big over-the-top fade route on him for the touchdown. I mean, they really did a good job against him. The one breakout play was the crossing route late in the game, and Ohio State finally came to that adjustment. But, you know, was he the difference in the game? I wouldn't necessarily say that as it relates to that. Stover made a couple of big plays. They ran the ball fairly well when they had to. But at the end of the day, you know, the mistakes, you know, the fourth down three was kind of the pivotal point in the game when Penn State didn't make it. Because other than that, it's a one-score game, and Penn State, you know, did what they had to do out there to have a chance to win in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, they did. I thought they did a good job. They play, for the most part, they played zone, and they ran the two wides deep against the zone, and that opened it up underneath. That's how I saw it. Is that how you saw it?
Yeah, and they got in his face and held him up sometimes, and they did a nice job. And look, at the end of the day, you know, up until the fourth down, when you look at Ohio State's average starting field position was their own 22-yard line.
That's right.
They did a great job. I mean, that was a well-coached football game, and you take your shot on the fourth and three because you feel like this is your shot. And it didn't work out for you. So, you know, everybody wants to be critical of coaching and the third down. You know, they never put the defense in a bad position. The defense had a field to defend almost the entire game. You know, I thought coming away from that thing, you know, you got a young quarterback on the road and you had a chance to win the game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, you know, you go through 3.5 hours of that. And you know, it's interesting because Penn State came into the game averaging 6.3 yards per play on first down. Because we talk about the 1 of 16 on third down. It's what you do on first and second down that sets up what your deal is on third down. Well, they averaged 6.1 on first down in this game. But when you're 0 of 6 on third and less than four, and you're 1 of 3 on fourth down, all right, and I think what, 2 of the 4th downs were less than 4. That sound right?
Right.
Yep. I mean, that not finding a conversion there somewhere is tough. And that's a credit to Ohio State's defense, but that's hard to do sometimes. And you can't sustain any momentum when that's happening, right?
No. And part of it is getting in a rhythm.
Yeah.
You know, because when you get into a rhythm, then you get confident. I think there was a little bit of, and look, there's some young people in key spots on the offense, in quarterback, to where when you have, you know, this is the first time he's really had that kind of adversity, and he'll learn from it, and Drew will learn from it, the team will learn from it. Without a guy like Langdon up front at guard, that's a big loss. I mean, they're missing some key people in terms of leadership and that kind of thing. So yeah. I think, you know, when you get into that, it's hard. You need somebody to kind of take charge. And I don't know if they have that personality on that offense. You know, when you watch Michigan with J.J. McCarthy, that kid, you know, he's been around. You know, there's only three or four teams in the country, a quarterback that started more than 15 games in a top 10, 20 defense. So Penn State's got the top 20 defense. Just don't have a very experienced quarterback yet. But you know what? There's so many things ahead of him right now. And look, there's so many things ahead of this team. Now, yes. I know immediately everybody's like, well, Michigan. I said, dude, play Indiana first. And then Maryland is not a given.
That's right.
People are looking at Michigan already. And then after Michigan, Rutgers is playing pretty good football right now, too. So, I mean,
6-2.
You know, yeah, just take it one at a time, folks. Like, honestly, right. The sun came up this morning. The leaves are beautiful. Let's look forward to the Indiana game.
As a coaching staff, every coaching staff handles it, you know, in their own way. After something like this, what was the way that the staffs you were on handled the first couple of days of the next week to do what you could to get the team back on track?
Well, I'll give you two different examples. One was good, one was bad. In 99, you know, we lost to Minnesota in a game we never should have lost. It was crushing. And that team moped around, and it was tough to get them off it. And then we went out and played Michigan, had them down 10 points, and they drove twice. Some quarterback named Brady drove two long drives to beat us.
Yeah.
And, you know, that team really went in the tank after that Minnesota loss. Just never really got their footing back under them. And I go to 05, where we just had a brutal loss out of Michigan, where a couple things that shouldn't happened. And that team made up their mind that we're going to win the rest of our games. Same thing in 08 when we lost to Iowa. That team just said, we're going to win the rest of our games, win the Big Ten. So that can happen for this team, but it has to start with Indiana. And, you know, I feel like I would be a good guy for the, you know, mental health hotline for Penn State fans right now. I may have to open up a hotline and say, call me and I'll try and talk you through this.
Well, that's because there's a couple of things. So let's just turn our attention now. It's got to be Indiana next. No matter what you do, you've got to come out. You've got to win this game this week. I know there's no getting around it.
Yep.
In 17, 19, in 22, Penn State hit November, and there was nobody left on the schedule that gave them a signature win. They won, but there was nobody that vaulted them. They still have opportunities based on what they have here that's still in front of them that actually can do that, Jay.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, you go out and you beat Michigan. And then if you go out and win the next two, I'm getting ahead of myself already.
Yeah, if
Penn State would have run the table, you know, and Michigan beats Ohio State, which I think that, you know, if I had to, you know, make a guess as to right now, I think Michigan's the best team in this conference, maybe, but you know, just in terms of the whole package.
Sure.
Penn State beats them, and if Penn State wins out and Michigan beats Ohio State, now you got a three-way tie with one loss each. You know, based on all three of them, you know, who goes to the Big Ten championship game? I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. Probably, but it's probably Ohio State based on the Notre Dame win, the Penn State win. I don't know, because Michigan hasn't beaten anybody yet.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you're sitting there at 11-1. And whether you make the Big Ten championship or not, the playoff committee's got a decision to make about a lot of. There's gonna be a lot of. I think there'll be a lot of one-loss teams laying around, and who knows? But if you don't take care of Indiana, end of story. And this is a team. This is a game that, quite frankly, I think that Penn State comes out and they're focused. I think it would be great to go out and try and get a fast start for Alar. to get him a little confidence and get down the field. And it's the defense. It's quite, you know, Indiana's defense is not real good. I mean, they're the best part of their, that's the best part of their team right now.
Right.
But to go out and get the running game going, get some play action game, get them confident and go and get out and jump on them early, I think then that resets his team for the rest of the way.
One final question before I let you go, and that's on Drew Aller. You do your show every week with Tom Bradley, yep. So you look at a lot of video during the week. You've now looked at 7 games of Drew Aller as a starting quarterback, getting a lot of reps in. Where is he better now than you think he was the first 2 or 3 games of the season?
Well, I think the one thing is he's playing better competition. So maybe his numbers have not been better, but he's playing better football teams. I think he's incredible. He does a great job of moving around the pocket, keeping his eyes downfield. He does a really good job of protecting the football and not putting his defense in a bad position. And the one thing I worry about him right now is he might be a little too tentative in that regard. I think right now the next thing for him is going to be to anticipate some things and let the ball rip downfield. I think that's the one area where you look at it. We did a couple weeks ago. We broke down the 3 Big Ten games during the bye week as where the ball had gone. Not a lot of balls downfield, but at the same token, hadn't turned the ball over. And they've done a great job capitalizing on turnovers, which is one of the surprises about Saturday with the fumble. I mean, they've just done a great job with that stuff. But I think the game is, you know, the game is slowing down for him a little bit, it looks like. But, you know, that the one thing with him is they're going to have to protect him, and they're going to have to get some running game going to help him out.
Jay, always a pleasure, my friend. Appreciate it so much.
Well, always fun, Steve, and see you down the line soon.
Sounds great. Jay Paterno joining us on the show today. Our thanks to Mark Wogenrich, by the way, in the opening half hour of the show. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, RV, motorcycle. And they want to save you money. Make sure you're fully insured all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. We'll continue with more in a moment. And again, anything you want to call in and ask about, believe me, this is your show. So if you want to talk about, either ask a question or vent about something, whatever, that's perfectly fine with me. It's your opportunity to talk. It's not just about all of us talking. How you feel is really important, too, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could chop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. 3 dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Hey, by the way, your Eagles defense was just phenomenal last night. I thought against that offense, and I know Jalen Waddle got hurt and so forth. I thought the Eagles defense played great.
Coming out party for Sean Desai. Everything was just wonderfully done last night.
I mean, it's a week by week thing. I'm not into coming out parties and things like that either. You know, you got to do it again next week too. But they did a great job. I mean, that's a terrific offense. They bring different challenges than other teams do, and I thought the Eagles were just all over it last night. Played really, really well, and now are equal with the Chiefs with the best record in the NFL. Remember Lamar Jackson, Steeler game? I was critical of how he played. He was brilliant yesterday against Detroit. Not just good, he was brilliant. I mean, name me a mistake he made. None. He was great.
That was stunning.
That's Lamar Jackson at his best. That was really, he is a hard handle for anybody when he's playing like that. Whoa. Tremendous. In the last half hour, I do want to get to the Iowa game with Minnesota about the fair catch. Jack and I were watching that on the plane, and something happened in the preseason here, which I can then give you some perspective on what, quote, the thought process is, even though I don't agree with the thought process at all. Like, I don't agree with it at all. I thought it was a horrible call. And not only that, what's interesting is that's not the call that was made on the field. The call on the field, I think, was, you know, we didn't have the sound up. But the call on the field was a touchdown. It's the replay guys that overturned it. And I'll give you at least some perspective as to, because when Jack and I were talking about it on the plane, he says, what the? I said, you know what? Something happened in the preseason here when the Big Ten officials were here. And so I'll tell you about what that story is. And I'm also getting a little bit sick and tired, to be honest with you, of some people making light of what Michigan did with sign stealing. Like, oh, well, hey ho. Oh, hey ho, what? You're not allowed to do what they did. And it's more than, and believe me, if you think it's one guy, you lead the league in naive. Okay? You can look at any tape, and if you can see the signs, you can decipher them because they're on tape. You can do it. All right? That's allowed. Whether it's a TV tape or it's an all 22. Now, a lot of times you can't see the sideline in either one, but you can. But you can't send somebody there with video and video the signs.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Prudy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show is brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, RV, whatever it may be, motorcycle. They'll do everything they can to save you money. Could be going over state lines where allowed. Could be bundles. Because customer service means everything. They want to make sure that you are fully covered, but also getting the best rate possible. Customer service means everything to them at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. He held on during the break. We always appreciate to hear from Doug in Wellsboro. Hi, Doug. How are you?
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
I'm going to start specific, then just a couple general questions overall.
Sure.
Again, why not two people back on a punt return? You're essentially going to catch the ball at midfield if you catch the ball. Even if it's windy, you can help each other out. You're not going to get much of a return. I don't understand why they don't put two back, especially in that situation.
Fair, because that was the one punt that hit the ground. And again, we're at the very top, so we're high up, so I couldn't judge. Like, if I'm at Beaver Stadium, I can judge when you're lower to the field as opposed to Ohio State. So we'd have to ask Brian about how swirling it was down there. So I don't know what he was dealing with that, or if he just misjudged it. And that's always, I think, a fair question to ask as to why not two instead of one back there. And especially when you're playing on the road, because it's one thing at home, you can hear your sideline at home. It's more difficult on the road in terms of whether to take it or not. And I asked Caden Saunders last week about years ago, Derek Williams told Jack Ham and myself about how he judges a punt. And he said he'd be back there by himself, and the first thing he would do, he would glance at the gunners. Did the gunners get a free release off the line of scrimmage, or did they get hit and held up at the line of scrimmage? And that helped determine whether or not he fielded a ball. Seemed like a logical answer. I asked Caden Saunders about that last week, and he said he mostly is listening to the sideline as to whether he should take it or not. So I think, you know, you bring up a fair point about two guys being back there, especially in conditions like that. I mean, that's certainly not the philosophy, but it's not an unfair point.
I can see one guy back normal times, but in that particular situation, that kid's punting from his end line.
Yeah.
Not the goal line, the end line.
Yeah.
So the number one thing you have to do is catch that ball, and you'll have the ball at midfield, even possibly right. plus territory. And they let it hit the ground. So, I mean, with two guys back, at least you can help each other out something. But I can't – I mean, that's you can't have that.
Right, and it ended up being a 72-yard punt, and it flipped the field right when you thought you had a chance to maybe, you know, have an opportunity at point-blank range.
Yeah. Second thing is, on the fourth and three, fourth and four, you're on the negative side. You're not even plus side. You always talk about extending the game, giving yourself a chance, things like that. They don't make that, the game's over. They didn't make it, the game's over. They were down one score, punt it down. Maybe something happens. Maybe they fumble. Maybe a ball gets batted around. Maybe Ohio State fumbles, throws an interception, maybe a three and out. But to put everything on that one possession, that one play, when you're not doing that well to begin with, and the game's over, which it was. I don't understand it.
Yeah, the two thought processes on something like that come into play here. Number one is yours. So let's talk. I'll put maybe words in your mouth. You can tell me if I'm right or wrong here. Punt the ball there. Your defense is playing really well. They give you a good chance of getting a three and out, and you get the ball back in the same spot, and now you can go about your business from there. Right, especially with a punter that's having A, a really good day, and B, does not have a touchback this season. Okay, so maybe you can get knock it down to maybe, I don't know, let's be conservative here, the 8 to 15 yard line. Right, so that would be one thought process, and would it be fair to say that's your process?
That's correct. I mean, right. Okay. you are correct.
Right, so now we'll go to the other side, because it's okay. So he's thinking to himself, based on the answer he gave in the post game, and this is we apologize about the post game. I guess the cord was under a door, the door opened, knocked the plug out. That's this stuff is explained to you later. You're like, oh, okay. I mean, you can't control that.
And was this like the scene from Airplane where the guy pulled the plug when the guy was there coming in to land?
Yeah.
He said, never mind.
I think he looked like the same guy, too. But I guess he explained with everybody about the time remaining in the game, and they caught the big break with the punt going off Fleming's foot and Tyler recovering it. And they felt like this was the chance to keep it alive. And they've done so well on fourth down this year. They wanted to keep that drive going. Okay. If it works, everybody's like, all right, that's great. Okay, that worked. All right. And James has kidded with me once. If he's kidded me with me once about this, he's done it maybe 20 times. He says, the fourth down calls. He says, a whole bunch of them are working. They love us. He says, the second we have one go bad at the wrong time, he says, they're going to crush us. Well, that one didn't go well. And again, that's he's thinking about number of possessions remaining. They got a big break. They've got some momentum. They've got some field position. They felt they needed to take advantage of it then. Your thought process, which I have no problem with at all, Doug, zero. Punt the ball. Defense is playing great. And you're hoping that, and again, let's say you punt the ball and then they get a couple of first downs, and now you're left with 2 minutes. You know what I mean? So it doesn't mean that each scenario, it does have a level of imperfection to it when you're talking about it. Because you could punt it, get the three and out, get the ball at midfield, great, worked perfectly. Or you could punt it, and under circumstances, they get a couple of first downs, and now there's 2 minutes left, and you're looking around like, oh, man, we don't have a lot of time. We got the ball back at the 20-yard line and with three timeouts and 2 minutes left. So you see what I mean? There's no, like, each answer has an imperfection to it. And, of course, the one imperfection ended up being the fourth down play and not converting it, and they got the ball in great field position and then scored a touchdown. So each one has imperfections in it, and I understand completely where you're coming from with yours.
Right. Hindsight's 20/20, Steve. We can sit here on Monday and say this or that, you know.
Right.
They could have got the ball and marched down the field, burned the clock, and you got the ball with a minute something left. But at least punting it gives you a chance. They're going to go to Harrison. It gives you more of a buffer. Franklin, they're into statistics and stuff. They have all these statistics guys nowadays. You know the statistics. You get the ball on the plus side of the field. The chances of scoring a field goal or a touchdown are you know, very, very high.
Yes,
so to put it all on one
play.
I've got
those stats.
The fourth down works against other defenses. You're going against Ohio State at Ohio Stadium on one play for the game.
And then you're
struggling.
And then there's the other part, too. You could punt the ball down there, right? And they turn it over.
Right.
So, I mean, in other words, so you've got pluses of each one and negatives on each one. So I'm just saying, that's another plus if you punt it down there. You may get a turnover, and suddenly you're sitting there at the 20-yard line. Okay. Right? It's an interesting debate. There's no question about that. And he chose one that didn't work out and brings with it a level of criticism.
Right. I don't want to. I mean, these are specific plays we're picking out. Like I said, hindsight's 20/20.
Right. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Last thing, bigger picture. I mean, no one should be surprised. This is 11 out of 12, you know, and they're falling behind Michigan, too. Ohio State has 5 stars. They didn't even play their top corner, Abuka didn't play. Henderson didn't play. Mm-hmm. The talent level is just not there. Our wide receivers, Keandre Lambert-Smith was a 3 last year. They're trying to make him a 1. They have Liam Clifford out there. No separation, no nothing. I mean, it's just a difference in talent level is why you get 11 out of 12. No matter the coaching decisions, no matter the ball bounces this way or that way, it's just a difference in the talent level.
Well, the talent level with Harrison's different. All right. The talent level between Tate and Fleming and Penn State's receivers is not. All right. It really isn't. Harrison, though, and I go back to the Georgia game. Georgia has as great a talent as there is any in the country, right?
Right.
Who was the best player in the field in the Georgia game?
Harrison still was.
Harrison, right? I mean, he was. Right? Not the other guys. He was. And going into the game, you knew he was going to be the best player in this game. And to his credit, when they needed him to make plays or tough catches, he did. The other guys out there, it's pretty comparable between the two teams. But he is an exceptional player. I mean, does Michigan have a guy like that? No. They have good receivers. Roman Wilson's very good. Cornelius Johnson's very good. But they're not Harrison. And when you, I sat back and I watched a lot of games this weekend, Doug, once I got home. Right. You notice what, you know, something I really have been noticing, because the NFL's gotten into this cover 2 deal. Notice how many receivers get behind people. Hardly anybody gets behind
people.
Nobody
does anymore.
Right. Nobody does. So you've got to be precise with your passing game. Everybody has to be. And that's why when you get a guy like this, you ride him. He took 35 attempts in the game. 16 were to one guy. And he got 11 completions with him. I mean, what does that tell you about him?
Did you see how Pitt, Wake Forest ended?
I did. I saw that.
What did you think?
Number one, you're an undisciplined football team when a guy grabs a guy by the leg and pulls him 3 or 4 yards off the pile. It's one thing if you pull somebody off the pile. It is a penalty. But you keep dragging him? Like, what are you doing? And then you're running down as a whole team celebrating the end zone. You get 30 yards in penalties. So now you put yourself back. Okay. For Christian, I hate that rule where it's like where you start the slide. I mean, I know we explain it all the time. I can't stand that rule, Doug. Right? You know, it's like, it's to me, it's where you go down and where the ball is when you go down, not where you start to slide. Because he was sliding to stay inbounds to keep the clock running and thought he had the first down. And you're talking about a judgment call of inches here, and I feel like you have to have a better feel for the game than that. And I didn't like that call at all.
No, I didn't either. I thought he had the first down.
Yeah, I mean, I did too.
Even watching it live, I mean, it was a bang-bang thing. The one angle did show he did start to slide, maybe right at the line. But
I know Bob in Hanover's waiting on the line. But, Doug, the Iowa game, let me quickly explain the Iowa game about what happened on the touchdown. It's 12-10 Minnesota. So I know you're shocked Minnesota goes 3-and-out. And punts the ball. Now, after that stunning development, Iowa's best overall player by a wide margin is Cooper DeJean. Great corner, great punt returner. I don't understand why they don't use him on offense, to be frank with you. Okay? He's back to receive the punt. And Jack and I are looking at each other like, you know, hey, look, this guy here gives him, yeah, he could return it 20 yards and set up the game-winning field goal. Right? So they punt the ball. It takes a bounce. He's pointing, picks it up, boom, breaks two tackles, breaks another at the 25, touchdown, place goes crazy. Iowa's going to win the game. We're like, we're back in row 38 of the plane, like, how about that? Okay. And then they're reviewing it. So, of course, what do we think they're reviewing? Whether he stayed in bounds or not. Well, NBC, to its credit, has a great shot down the sideline. He's not only in bounds, Doug, he's in bounds by about 6 inches to a foot. It's not even close. Like, okay, that'll stand. And they keep going and keep going and keep going. Like, what the heck? And then they ruled he called a fair catch. So you watch the replay, and, of course, he's got his left hand up, and he's pointing, right? And what do you, in all likelihood, I can guess exactly what he's doing and make a really educated guess. He's probably yelling, poison, 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 which is telling his players, get away from it, because I don't want it to be Cam Miller against UMass. I don't want it to be Julian Fleming against Penn State where the ball hits you and they recover, right? That's what he's trying to do. Instead, they rule he called a fair catch. So
They didn't call illegal sign until after the review. They didn't call that until they went from point A to point D after.
That's right.
It was whether he was in or out. I mean, they never called anything.
Right. Well, the officials on the field called it a touchdown. It's the review people.
Right.
As you know, over the years, I've had my biggest problems with the review people, not the officials on the field. And the review people overruled it. In the preseason, Big Ten officials came in and they officiated two Penn State scrimmages, the one in the rain that was open and then one in Beaver Stadium. When it was over in Beaver Stadium, it was a Saturday, and I'm standing there, and after Penn State had just finished doing a special teams drill, the official said, you've got to be careful with your hand signals, because normally when they're back there on a kickoff, not a punt, but a kickoff, you'll see the guys go, like, point to their chest, like, me, me, and they're yelling out, me, me, me. That way the other guy knows it's who's got the ball, right? He says, you can't bring your hand dramatically up when you're signaling that, because we'll call it a fair catch. I'm standing there looking over like, what? To be honest with you, my first thought was, what a bunch of BS. That's exactly what I thought. I said, that's stupid. Right? Everybody knows, you put your hand up over your shoulder, it's a fair catch. Some of these guys do it really late, but they do it. And I explained to Jack, I said, they explained this, that any hand movement that looks like whatever, they're going to call it a fair catch. Have a feel for the game. You're in the replay booth. He is not signaling a fair catch. Jeez.
Was it Dave Whitbo in the booth?
That's a very good question. But I think the ruling was made in Chicago, so I don't think it was made there. But
all right, yeah, I know Bob's on the phone. I'll get off and let him on. So
thanks, Bobby. How are you?
Good.
Hey, Bob.
Make it quick here. Just two quick points. Was there any review of the play where Chop Robinson got hit in the head by another helmet? I mean, I didn't even see the announcers on TV talk about it at all.
Well,
and should it have been reviewed?
Good question. I don't know. We had the stadium scoreboard replay in the booth, and they showed very little. So I didn't. So we had no access to any of the Fox. We had no access to the Fox replays or anything like that. And the stadium stuff was very limited. So I can't answer that for you as to how he got hurt on that play. It's a very good question.
It was a helmet to helmet hit, and he was sort of coming up. I'm not saying it was a blatant intentional hit, but it definitely was helmet to helmet, and had they called that, that would have made a big difference in the game as well. I mean,
okay. Yeah.
Good
question, and I can't answer it because I never saw the replay of it because it wasn't provided to us in our booth.
Yeah. And Big Ten Network didn't even talk about it after the game either when their nightly show.
Really?
How's Chop doing? Is it a concussion?
Well, I'm not at liberty to say. That'll be James that has to say. But I completely respect the fact he asked the question, but I'm not really the one that's allowed to answer that. James would have to answer that.
Gotcha. And the last thing is, when they recovered that fumble by the quarterback and ran it back for a touchdown, I think technically it was a hold on Harrison or against Harrison, but he wasn't even in the play. I mean, did it really matter? It wasn't blatant and over-the-top holding, but I've seen worse. But should they just pick up those flags when they're not even in the play?
Good question, because when you're sitting there and looking at it, like the back judge is only looking at his specific area. He's not looking at the totality of the play, so he saw a hold and he threw a flag, and that's why he threw it. Picking it up, because, again, it had literally nothing to do with the play. Interesting point, but he's called the penalty. I don't know if you can pick it up at that point because, to him, he's already made a call. Oops. I guess we lost Bob. Brian in Northern Virginia. Do we have Brian?
Hey, Steve, how are you doing today?
Good, Brian. Thanks for holding. Appreciate your patience.
Hey, anytime. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just calling because it's kind of a comment. Not as much of a rant as Matt usually does, but the question, I mean, leading into a question, you know, I love Penn State. I'm an Nittany Lion Club member. I'm an alum. I give a lot of money. I always want us to be successful, and I've been supportive of Coach Franklin and everybody. I'm just getting frustrated and tired of being perceived as a second-tier program and losing all consistently to Ohio State and Michigan. I'm more concerned about the way these losses kind of pile up. If you think, one, that's going to hurt us in terms of recruiting, financial contributions to the university, the Nittany Lion Club, a lot of the capital improvements to the stadium, and lastly, it's kind of like, what do you think we can do to make us elite, to finally be on that level where, you know, we know walking onto the field, you know, the defense is elite, but the offense wasn't. Game plan was not very good from the offensive side of the ball. So those are my kind of concerns. It's the overall well-being of the program, what we can do to get to the next level, and just, you know, just very frustrated today and Sunday. And so those are some of my kind of questions/thoughts.
Well, first of all, your frustration echoes everybody's frustration. All right, so you're not standing alone with frustration, Brian. You know, everybody is frustrated with it. Keep stacking recruiting classes. And that's what you need to keep doing. Keep stacking as many top 10 to top 12 recruiting classes as possible. And that's going to be the one way to keep doing it. They've been doing that over the last couple of years, and that's really helped. So I think that's the biggest way to keep going with this and realize that, you know, there are certain elements that need to pay off for you along the way. NIL is a big payoff
for you along the way that really needs to help and has to be a part of the recruiting formula, even though he can't directly say, hey, we're going to give you. You can't do that. But if they're aware of what the possibilities happen to be, because Marvin Harrison's of the world that come on, and NIL had nothing to do with Marvin Harrison being at Ohio State. I mean, he went to Ohio State before any of this happened, okay? But getting a player like that and getting a series of players like that, that does make a difference. Penn State's closed a lot of gaps over the last couple of years by stacking classes. They need to keep doing that. They need to find that way to win those two sequences in these games. I mean, a 60-minute game, there was a sequence they got away from them in the first half, the fumble, and then, you know, that wasn't because of the holding penalty previously referenced. And the one in the second half where they couldn't convert on fourth down, and Ohio State drove down the field and won. That's the difference in the whole game right there, those two sequences. Everything else, you're dead even. You're both playing great defense. You're both really good on special teams. Ohio State's offense outside of Harrison was not special. They ran for 79 yards total in the game. Right? I mean, that's how close they were. So keep stacking classes and somehow find those sequences. And if I knew how to find the sequences, I would not be sitting in this chair.
Well, great job during the game. You are a million times better than the people on the broadcast.
Well, that means a lot that you said that to me. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate that.
Take care.
All right. Neil Coulong tomorrow. Matt is going to rant tomorrow. Realize Jose Altuve has 26 career postseason home runs in 101 games. That's 42 home runs in a regular season. In the most meaningful spots in the world, and you can't stand him.
Correct. Go Rangers tonight.
Everybody in Houston speaks highly of you. I've been there.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.